Welcome. You're listening to a broadcast from Barnabas Foundation, your trusted partners for smart and powerful giving.
This episode is a rebroadcast of one of our most listened to episodes from 2022. We hope you enjoyed this conversation with our planning team, where they discuss what happens in a planning meeting, best practices for referrals, and why your planners are so passionate about this work.
Good morning, everybody, and thank you for joining us. My name is Kurt Nola, Director of Member Relations here at Barnabas Foundation, and I trust you had a wonderful Christmas and New Year season. As we finished up the year here, we were really excited just to see the number of donors that were coming through the door and working with us as we approach the end of the year. And I'm happy to say that we came up just short of sending out almost $100 million worth of grants out to charities. It was something like 13,000 checks. Our finance team was sharing the numbers yesterday. And I couldn't tell you how thrilled we are as a staff that we, as an organization, get to help your donors give so effectively to so many of you, our favorite ministries, in the work that we're doing. So thank you for that. It was very much a very, very, very blessed year, and we hope you felt the same. Joining me today is our team of planners from around the country. You'll get them. They'll each introduce themselves here in just a moment. And we're here to talk a bit today about what happens during a planning meeting. So you often send donors our way. These are your trusted, most loyal supporters to your organization, and you hand them off to us. And we're going to talk a bit about what goes on in those conversations. And so we really encourage you, if you have questions about what's happening, feel free to put them in the Q&A section, and they'll pop up here on our screen, and we'll dive into those questions as we go. Today's session is being recorded. A recording of it will be available here usually within about 48 hours or so. It's posted in our member center. So if you need to share this recording or any prior ones with other members of your team, you can find those in the library there on the member center. So again, today's topic, what happens during a planner's meeting? And, this is often a question that I get a lot of times from organizations that are engaging with us to understand what our services are all about. What exactly are we doing? And so we're going to cover that today as we go through these series of questions. But one of the first things I wanted to touch on is, what you have at your access is a team of lawyers that are all, they went to law school, they spent the time, they made the investment and got their law degree, passed the bar exam, were practicing in private law, and the Lord put on their heart to do this work in a nonprofit environment, which quite honestly, the economics are not the same as if they worked in private law. So there's a passion here that exists. And I wanted to ask Adam just initially. Adam, of course, when you answer this question, feel free, please introduce yourself and share a little bit about you. But what is it, why are you so passionate about this work?
Well, thanks for having me, Kurt, and nice to see everybody. I do apologize for my voice. I just recently got over a cold, and that is the last thing to return to me. So appreciate your forbearance. But I cover the upper Midwest and Plain States down to Colorado. I'm in Wisconsin, just west of Milwaukee. Prior to coming to Barnabas, I practiced for 7 years in private practice in estate planning and contested estate litigation. And really for me, the passion in estate planning came from that contested estate litigation part of my practice, is just seeing how a not well-formed plan can tear families apart. But how a well-formed plan can really keep families together and just make a sad event, the death of a loved one, eliminate a lot of unnecessary hassle and stress. So for me, as a details guy, I do love sitting down with people, getting to know each and every one of the donors. Everybody has a different family dynamic. You all have different goals. And it's really fun to dig into that, hear from you, what's on your heart, what you see for your family. And then dig into the details and find a plan that really meets those goals. On the spiritual side of things, and this is probably my favorite benefit, why I'm so passionate about Barnabas's work, is through those conversations, we get to hear about the ministries that are on the donors' hearts. A lot of times they're also physically involved with those ministries. So for me personally, I get to see kingdom work being explained to me, how it's going on all across the world, whether it's chicken farms in Africa, translations of Bibles in Papua New Guinea, helping the homeless in Denver, Colorado. And it's just a great reminder that sometimes God moves quietly but steadily through his people. And so it's just a really great front row seat in those conversations to what God is doing.
Oh, thank you, Adam. And we joked a little bit earlier today as we were on a team call that Adam's just so passionate about this work. That's the real reason why I lost his voice. You know,
shouting constantly.
Excellent. Well, Adam, thank you. You've been with us for just over a year now, if I'm not mistaken, right? You joined fall of 2019 or 2020? I forget.
September 21st of 2020.
There you go. So just cracked, just passed his year and 3 months mark or so here. So welcome aboard again, and thank you for the contribution you've been making to our organization and to so many of our members through the work with their donors. So Travis, our friend out on the West Coast, who's been covering that whole Western territory for quite some time, you know, introduce yourself as well. But one of the things that we get, a question we get often is, do we draft documents? And when we explain why we don't, just take a moment to explain to our members why we don't draft documents and why it's so important for us not to.
No, absolutely. Good morning, Kirk. Good morning, all. As Kirk mentioned, I am Travis Moore. I've been with Barnabas Foundation now 4 years, came out of a number of years of private practice as well. I am out west, cover 9 western states. I think I have the largest territorial footprint of any of the planners, but you know, I've been West Coast guy pretty much my whole life. So I'm physically located in Santa Barbara County here on California's Central Coast, but I do get quite around quite a bit. As Kurt pointed out, all the planners that you see came to Barnabas Foundation with some years of planning experience. And so we can certainly draft. That's not an issue. It's just a matter of helping you and your donors, protecting you, protecting us, and protecting your donors, avoiding any of these contested probates like Adam just talked about. We're sensitive to conflicts of interest. You certainly make a contribution, and we don't want any beneficiary thinking that through our conversations, we were steering resources. So we're protecting you, protecting us, protecting the gifts that your donors want to leave from a contest. Now, that's not to say there's not value added. I think the second part of that is, well, if you're not drafting, why would we want to meet with the planners? And I think a colleague's going to address the planning process maybe a little bit more in the weeds. But the high view is, why would we want to be engaged in planning then if we're not drafting the ultimate documents? And they're probably going to have to pair up with their own counsel or use one of these online software preparation programs. And I think the short answer is because it gives them a chance to walk through the planning process, get through a lot of the areas they're stuck in. We're going to tailor the issues for them. We're going to go through the process just like they were our own client in many ways. It's a confidential communication. We'll help them clarify the issues. And we're also going to help them spot opportunities, for especially with respect to their tax-efficient charitable giving. And remember, at the end of all of this, I think most of you are tracking, but this is going to be memorialized in a written package called a blueprint. And then they're going to have that not only for their records, but then to bring to local council as well, to meet with the local planning attorney. And in many of the communities in which we work, the local bar certainly appreciates that. And I found we'll often even give a discount as well, because we've done a lot of the legwork and helped them walk through a lot of those tough decisions. So that's wonderful to be here. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Travis. One thing to keep in mind, folks, as you're talking with our referring donors to our team, you know, each member of our team are experts in estate planning. This has been their focus for their careers and what they've been focusing on here. And so we do have to rely on local counsel, and they are wonderful people. Don't get me wrong. It's just that we spend our entire day living and breathing estate tax, state law and tax law. And so it's what we know, and we know we're just specialists in it. And so oftentimes we're able to assist those local councils when donors go to them to draft their final documents with answering any questions. We just have easier access to the information, I suppose, just because we're living and breathing it on a daily basis. And while local council would obviously get to the right answer, they may have to spend a little more time researching things. And so we're able to be a stopgap for them and able to provide that expertise to them in a short order. You know, Amy, you've been with us for, I think you joined about 9 months before I came on board here. So you've been around since early 2006, coming up on your 16th anniversary now. And yep. So she's been around the block a few times here with clients. And, you know, so Amy, when you sit down to meet with a donor, what happens in that meeting? You know, what do you typically engage with in terms of conversation and the topics you cover?
Thanks, Kurt. Right. I'm Amy Beatty, and I was in private practice for 17 years and joined Barnabas at the end of January. This January, it'll be 16 years. So you can do the math, 33 years. I've been doing this for a long time. I live here in Michigan, and Steve Baker, who you'll hear from in a little while, Steve and I cover Michigan. I also cover New York and that. New York and northeast of that, all those states. And then I have a little bit in the middle. I cover North and South Carolina, Virginia, Tennessee, and Kansas. So that's kind of my area. But I think what's really important before what happens in the meeting is knowing that there's a group of people that do a lot of heavy lifting before the meeting occurs. We have a ground crew, I call them, in our back office, Laura, Kathy, and Ann, who your donors are going to talk to those three ladies first, and they help filter where the donor, which planner the donor is going to talk to, because we have these regions that we cover, and Laura, Ann, and Kathy talk to them and help your donors understand, again, that the meeting is confidential, that there's no cost to the donor, and there's no obligation to do anything after the meeting is complete. And that, as Travis mentioned, we're not their attorneys, that ultimately they're going to take the blueprint and they're going to go to their own attorney. And then that person is going to send a pre-visit worksheet to the donor, and the donor is going to be filling out that pre-visit worksheet and sending it back to us, and they're going to set up an appointment time for us. And that appointment is either going to be by Zoom, or it's going to be by phone, or if it's safe, COVID safe, we're going to meet them face to face. And then at that meeting, we have an opportunity as planners to talk to your donor about Barnabas, our history, and the fact that we can plan with them from a biblical perspective, something that not all of us have had an opportunity to do in private practice. And then when we're planning with your donor, we're going to break that plan down into basically four different elements. We're going to talk to your donor about the people that we're planning for. And here's where I think it's important that this meeting is confidential. Your donor is going to be able to talk to us about some things that maybe they wouldn't talk to you about. They're going to talk to us about maybe a child that's had some substance abuse issues, and that's going to help us plan with them. Or they're going to talk to us about a child that has a disability, and we're going to be able to talk about special needs planning. Then we're also going to talk to them about the property in their plan. And in that pre-visit worksheet, they're going to list out their assets. For many of your donors, this is going to be the first time they have ever put pen to paper and listed those assets. And that's important for us, not because we're nosy, but we're going to be able to help them identify which assets are the best assets for giving, if they have any tax issues that we have to plan around, and then ultimately what's the best plan for them based on those assets. And then next, we're going to talk about the plan. What's the best plan for their family? Is it going to be a will? Is it going to be a will and a trust? Are there other tools in our toolbox that we're going to have to help them with? And that's the third part. And then lastly, we talk to them about who are the participants in their plan. We're going to talk to them about who's going to be the executor or the personal representative in their plan. Who's going to be the trustee? We're going to talk to them about who's going to be the personal representative in their power of attorney for finance, and the representative in their healthcare advocate. And then I think a really big one for some of our younger families is who's going to be the guardian of our children. One of my colleagues is going to talk about roadblocks. Sometimes a roadblock in order to get to an attorney to have your plan developed is answering some of these questions. So why do people use Barnabas? to help answer some of these questions ahead of time and doing it from a biblical point of view. One of the big questions that I get in a planning conference, and I just wanted to touch on this, is your donors ask us all the time, how do you get paid? I think the real question here, and I think the real concern for your donors is there's no free lunch. So we want to make certain we're not going to get a bill on the other end. And I know most of you as members do a great job assuring your donors that they won't get a bill. But I think it would be helpful to let them know that we get paid. And Kurt, you can correct me if I'm wrong or I'm saying this incorrectly. We get paid because of the generosity of members like yourselves, making an annual contribution to us. And then we also manage money that's been entrusted to us. There's an annual management reimbursement fee. And those are our two sources of income. And because of that, we're able to operate and provide these services to your donors at no cost to them. And I think if donors understand this at the very front end, there'll be less hesitancy for them to place that call and avail themselves of our services.
Oh, great. Great information, Amy. And you're absolutely right. As you were speaking, there was a couple of things that I picked up on. And the first being that when we have families go through that pre-visit worksheet and make that list of what they have, I think oftentimes it's rather surprising and eye-opening to them that they have a lot more than they perhaps realize. And when you add in the value of the home, the retirement assets, their other assets, their life insurance, many people are wealthier than they ever realized. And so that's, I always find that as being probably one of the most eye-opening experiences for some of these people. As you said, the first time they've ever done it. I'm an accountant type. I know what my balance sheet looks like because I'm an accountant nerd, right? You know, I would sit down and I know how much I owe who and how much I have. It's just something I've done from day one when I was about 16 years old when I started. But most people don't do that. And so this exercise is very, very eye-opening. But I hope that what folks heard from your comments here is that our approach to planning is it's a very holistic approach. It's not just focused in on how they leave a gift solely to your ministry. It's about helping that family walk down that estate planning path, find that right path for them that's God glorifying, that looks at what's the Lord blessed you with and what's he putting it on your heart to do with it and how best to accomplish those goals. And so these planning meetings may be 45 minutes, they might be 2 hours long, and sometimes it might be two more hours a second time we have to go back in and help them find that path. But too often, if they were just sitting across the table from an attorney, I could imagine they may either just offer a very quick answer to the question because the time is ticking and the clock, you know, the bill is accruing, or they may just get stuck and procrastinate and they don't have that opportunity to have a more lengthy conversation about how much is enough to leave to my children. Right. How do I set aside money for Danny who's got this special circumstance? What about our children that's got marital troubles and we're concerned about this, that, or the other thing? And we're able to do that and act, and you guys are able to do that really and act as that counselor and advisor to just help them walk down that path together so that they do get to a completed plan. And then lastly, you touched on there, Amy, the whole issue about how we get paid. It's important for our members to always be presenting us as you're in partnership with us. This is really, Barnabas really exists because of our members. You know, it is a partnership-based ministry. You all are willing to come together to share in the cost of having access to this level of expertise to support your donor base. And so every member contributes to the organization in different ways, depending on how much their need is in terms of our services. But this is in many ways an extension of you. It just happens to be a standalone firm. And so always be kind of presenting this as, you know, they're our partners in this ministry and we have access to their expertise to support you, the donor, in evaluating these types of things. But Amy, you hinted at roadblocks, and Nathan, that's kind of the next question for you. Another one of our newer members of our team came on board at the same time Adam did. And Nathan kind of fills the role as our managing director for the team. But Nathan, you know, in your work, what are some of the common roadblocks that you see people running into when they're sitting down and planning with you all?
Yeah, that's a great question. As Kurt said, I'm Nathan Osborne, Managing Director here of Planning Services. I also do cover a territory in right in the center of the United States, Illinois, Indiana, Missouri, and then down south. And so, yeah, there's a lot of roadblocks, and I've been doing real estate planning for many, many, many years. And the same kinds of roadblocks exist in the work that I do now at Barnabas. And, you know, first and foremost, it's just fear of the unknown. People just don't know what the process is. And I think it's just human nature. You know, we put something off if we don't know what it's going to be like or how it's going to work. And so I think that's kind of one of the first ones. But again, we just try to educate and have conversations. And a lot of it's about our faith and sharing our lives together. And so this should be a reassurance that, you know, this process is not a complicated one, but we just need to get it started. The other thing too with estate planning is there's a lot of tough decisions sometimes that need to be made, and people dread making those decisions. They want to put them off. And so these decisions might include, loved ones, how much they're going to get, how much is enough. And this can be intimidating. And, you know, this is really important. And this is another reason why, even though we don't actually draft or we're not your lawyer, it's important to meet with us, because we can really help you work through this as we get to know you and your family. You know, what drives us is the relationships that we build with families. And so we want to know what's going on. We want to pray with you. We want to talk with you, and we can help you walk through these tough decisions that need to be made. Now, the other thing too, is when you're talking about estate planning, you inevitably have to talk about your own mortality and the mortality of the ones that you love. Nobody likes to do that. One of the big jokes I used to have in private practice when it started to move towards the holidays, I would always kind of joke, oh, let's talk about mortality, you know, right before Christmas time, you know, and people would inevitably laugh about that. But in all seriousness, this is definitely a roadblock when we have these discussions, because people just don't want to talk about it. They don't want to deal with it. They don't want to think about it. And what we were talking about earlier in, you know, what Adam was saying is it's so important that we face this, because we don't want to leave a mess. You know, anybody who's had a family member pass away recently knows that if planning has not been done ahead of time, it can really create, even with a good plan, there's still hurdles that you have to jump. But, you know, if there's no plan or very, you know, not a good plan in place, it just compounds what's already a tough family season. So anyway, so mortality. And then finally, I'm just going to say good old procrastination. We all have to-do lists, right? And we all, as we remake those to-do lists daily, weekly, however you do that, the things we tend to not be looking forward to just get put down to the bottom of the to-do list over and over, right? And so human nature is just procrastinating for a lot of people. So you know, where we see this is all kinds of planning, really. It's not just estate planning, but it's, you know, financial planning, sometimes a tax planning. And this is just something that we have to overcome in our own mind, but we're here to help. We love you guys. We love working with donors. We love getting to know the families. We love praying with people. And we have, you know, that's why we're here. And we're here to walk you through this process and to try to eliminate these roadblocks.
Thanks, Nathan. And procrastination is a very powerful thing. I remember I joined Barnabas in December 2006. And shortly thereafter, in 2007, my ex-wife and I met with Amy. And I think she remembers, because my daughter was kept trying to unplug her computer from the wall outlet. It was rather kind of adorable. But it took 13 years before I finally signed a plan, because it was just something that I kept procrastinating. Even though I worked here on a daily basis and knew the importance of it, it wasn't something I wanted to go home and deal with. So it is, procrastination is a powerful thing. People don't want to necessarily always face their mortality, but oftentimes when I've been engaged with organizations or members, even a few donors, you know, we're called to be good stewards of all that we've been blessed with. And that includes both, you know, during our lifetime, but also that final act of stewardship in how you manage your affairs in your estate plan. So I always encourage, you know, folks to be considering that and thinking about that. Just a quick reminder too, if anybody does have questions, feel free to pop them into the Q&A section. We'll be happy to address them as they come up. I have a few more questions here. We had a couple members submit a couple questions ahead of today's meeting, which we'll address. But Steve, I wanted to kind of turn to you here for just a second as our eldest statesman here. You've been with us for, I think, the longest period of time here at Barnabas Foundation. And the question I have for you is, in your years of working with us and our members, you know, what are some of the best practices that members should keep in mind when we're talking about referrals, both, you know, on the front side of things when people are bringing referrals to us, but also what's that follow-up look like for them after they've kind of handed that referral off to us?
Yeah, thanks a lot, Kurt. And good afternoon, everybody. It's afternoon here in Michigan, and glad you're all joining us. Thanks for being so kind to me, though, Kurt, and saying the elder statesman. You could have said I was just the old guy, and you're just kind. So thank you. Steve Baker is my name, and I've had the privilege of being on staff here for 27 years now. Practiced before I came to Barnabas, and it's just been a real privilege and honor to just do a lot of planning with your donors over so many years here, and really excited about where our team is at, and we have some younger folks here too, and we're just really super excited about where God's leading us here. So I'm similar to Amy. I kind of work out of Michigan and get over to the East Coast and down to the sunny state of Florida. So, but you know, referrals are just marvelous partnership building kind of actions that we love to talk to you about. And we have received so many referrals from you. It's just fantastic. And there's some good ways to do this. First of all, I hope many of you are doing or have already done some of the member training and boot camps and things like that, where we'll try to help you learn some of the conversations to have with your donors and introduce this topic. But once you've kind of talked to a donor and they're at the point of saying, yes, I would really, you know, like to talk to this partner of yours called Barnabas Foundation, there's a couple of ways to do that handoff. You can call us and say, hey, you know, I've talked to this donor and they would really like to have a meeting with you. And then we'll go ahead and reach out to that donor. We'll refer to the fact that you've mentioned that they would like to talk to us. And then we'll kind of proceed as Amy had said earlier. You can also do kind of a joint conversation with us, with the donor on the phone, you on the phone, us on the phone, do a joint Zoom call to kind of just make this nice introduction, establish the partnership kind of a concept that we have with you, and then we can go ahead and proceed kind of from there. Another way that works well is with the email kind of connections. We do a lot of that with you now, where you'll send an email to the donor and copy us and kind of explain your situation and say, you know, this person or this couple would love to meet with you. And then we'll follow up and respond to that email and say, thank you so much. And Mr. and Mrs. Smith, you know, we'll be in touch with you so that we can, you know, kind of help you in your planning and whatever situations you're in. What we love to do then is kind of keep you in the loop as best we can with regards to when we're going to, that we've made some contact with them, when we're meeting. And we want you to know kind of that information so that you can stay in this relationship with your donor. We don't want to take that over. We want you to stay in there. And your follow-up a few weeks after you've made the contact with us is a great circling back to the donor, even, you know, 30 or 60 days after that, again, follow up with the donor, see how they're doing with that. And if this process might go a little longer, some of our more complicated planning situations could take longer than that. We're happy to kind of bring you along into that time frame and tell you where we're at with that. We do have some internal procedures on how we do kind of the follow-up and things that we do with that, but just be mindful that, you know, we have this relationship with this couple or this person, and they're sharing some confidential information with us, and we can't share that with you, but we're happy to keep you abreast of kind of where we are in the situation. But the best way for you to stay abreast of where things are at is for you to stay back into contact with that donor And they'll be happy to share with you as much as they wish to share with you. So hope that helps. And we'd love to hear the referrals from you. And we look forward to having many more of those with you.
Thanks, Steve. Yeah, you've been doing this for quite a while with us and certainly are the elder statesman here at the office and around the organization. But you hinted at our internal process, and I thought I'd just touch on that because I get this question quite often from members, and it came up again. You know, what is that feedback loop look like? And so when you send a referral to us, some of you send them directly to me or Linnell. Some of you send those into planning@barnabasfoundation.com. Some of you may call Ann and Laura directly on the team or Kathy, or you may contact one of our planners and hand off their referral. However it happens, it's going to get over to our coordinators and our planning team. And that's where Ann and Laura and Kathy step in. And they're going to want to acknowledge back to you that we've got the referral, right? So you're going to get that communication from us. And we're going to attempt to make that contact with a member, with your donor within 48 hours. First contact, we're going to try to reach out to them, whether it be via phone or email, try to coordinate that initial steps in this process. If we don't connect, we'll leave a voicemail on the phone or whatever. And then we'll try again a few days later. I think 3 days later, we're going to give them a call again. And if we have their email address, we're going to email them as well. And this is where we're going to blind copy you in on that email so that you're aware that we're now trying to make a second attempt to reach this individual. And then again, we'll try, you know, 3 to 5 days later, we'll try again to reach that individual. If we don't connect, we're going to circle back with you. Essentially, we're at about a 2-week time period here. We're going to let you know that we've been unable to connect and perhaps we should try another route. Steve alluded to that warm handoff. Anytime we can do that warm handoff, it's fantastic, where we can do those joint calls, joint video calls, even in-person meetings, if it makes sense. That way you bring a lot of confidence to the donor on who this organization is, and they're not walking in blindly. We always encourage folks, ask your donor for permission to have us contact them rather than just give them our contact information. And that's just because of the law of procrastination. You hand them our information that's going to get put on the counter and eventually be covered by mail, and who knows when they might get to it, versus if you get permission from them for us to contact them, we're going to be reaching out there within 48 hours or so. We've got a great brochure that really kind of talks about this partnership and the planning side of things called Planning with a Purpose. It really kind of dives into how our planning work, our partnership with each other works, and it's customizable. And if you don't have that one, we would encourage you to contact Linnell and make sure you get a copy of that in your kit of materials that you can send out. I see a question popped in. Let's see, Kevin mentioned here, all the planners. Yes, all of our attorneys are estate planning attorneys. If we mention a Venn diagram, it seems that there is an overlap between estate planning and charitable planning, but some planning, charitable planning is done testamentarily, is not done that way. Should all donors be directed to the attorneys first, or are there others within Barnabas that can help? Yes. So there are times when someone's considering doing something during their lifetime that may or may not end up involving any of the team here on the planning side of things. Our finance team, and specifically Cindy Riemersma and her team, often step into some of that planning work with them on gifts that are just something that somebody wants to do right now rather than at the end of their life. But oftentimes there's opportunities as a result of those gifts for us to talk with those folks about, and our planners will step in, especially if it's a complicated asset. They're often asked to participate. Or if there may be some broader kind of planning opportunities with their broader giving, both during their lifetime and in death. So I would say, and Steve, I'll just ask this question of you, out of all the contacts that you have with donors, what percentage of what you do is really estate planning, end of life planning versus, you know, current giving opportunities? There's a pretty specific mix there, right?
Yeah, I think there is always a mix. Maybe I could do a little background. Early on when I started with Barnabas, I think I did mostly estate planning stuff. And over the years, we've talked more and more about the non-cash gifts, and you've heard us talk about that. And to the point now where I'm probably doing a little bit more of the non-cash gifts than necessarily the estate planning stuff. If that's probably more the last couple of years, markets have been really strong, real estate's been strong, businesses are transferring from maybe one generation to another or being sold. And some of these are folks that I talked to, you know, 15, 20 years ago, possibly. So it sort of kind of builds, but the estate planning conversation does allow us the opportunity to, as Amy mentioned, I think to kind of look at the asset information and plant some seeds even about this particular real estate that is a rental property or the business interest or some other things. So the estate planning conversations, for me at least, might be a little less than the current kind of really complicated kinds of gift situations, but they all build off each other.
Mm-hmm. Well, great point. And no doubt during all of every one of these attorneys here have experienced an opportunity to introduce current giving opportunities with the asset base that most owners have, because so many of them are more tax efficient ways to give to you, their favorite ministries. One thing I wanted to note too in our follow-up program. So after we plan with a donor and we get them kind of their charitable giving blueprint, and have completed that process, referred them to local council. We then put them into a follow-through cycle where we're contacting them back at intervals of time to encourage them to get that plan done. This is also something that you as an organization can be very active part of. If you know that you referred someone to us and we've confirmed back to you that we've gotten a time to meet and we're sitting down with them, please do your own follow-up sequence with those individuals. Verify that the meeting's happened. If it hasn't happened, continue to encourage them to engage with us. And once it has happened, you know, kind of circle back with them. While we can't necessarily disclose all the personal, private, confidential information they've declared to us, it is still your donor relationship. And you can engage with them a bit about, you know, how has that gone? Have they been able to complete their plan? May I inquire if they've included our ministry in their plan? And see if you can't elicit that intention, gift intention from them. But always be in that encouraging role to help people see through to the end of that act of stewardship to get their estate plan done. Likewise, for folks who do complete their plan, we do put them through another follow-on cycle where we'll revisit with them on a periodic basis, generally every 3 to 5 years or so, where we're trying to just reconfirm the details of their plan and see if anything has necessitated a change. Have they had new grandchildren, new marriages in their family, you know, anything like that that may make it necessary for them to update their plan? Because keep in mind, as we discussed at our seminar in I believe it was August, on all the different reasons why someone needs to review their will, this is not a document that you want to produce and just put on a shelf and leave it there for 15 years. Life changes. And as a result, your plan needs to change too. And so we want to be an active part of that conversation with them throughout their entire lifetime, until they go home to meet the Lord and their plan comes to fruition. And ultimately, we hope our role in that process will be to keep that gift secured for you and your favorite ministries. Another question that kind of came up from one of our members, and Charles, thank you for this. You know, in your planning, what comes up that you might refer a donor back to the organization about? Is there anything that ever comes up that you say, you know what, I really think you need to speak with Charles at Christian Aid Mission or any other organization that might be out there? Anybody want to take that question and kind of, or can recall a situation where you referred a donor back to a member?
I'll address that if you don't mind.
Sure.
Sometimes when we're meeting with someone and they're talking about leaving money to a ministry and they want to do it in, say, scholarship form or endowment form, and we have to get back to the ministry and say, let's talk about how you want to set up scholarship. What's the minimum of a scholarship? We see that a lot with universities, sometimes with Christian schools. So there are times when we send them back to find out about funding and that sort of thing. And maybe one of my colleagues has another example, but specifically we've seen that.
No, I think that's a great example. Anytime there's been a program-based kind of question out there about funding or how do I set something up for this purpose or that purpose, we always invite them to come back and talk to you all. Another thing we encourage them to do too is to notify. I know that's part of the conversation during the planning, and we get this all the time is, you know, how do people find out that they've been included in an estate plan? Well, during our planning, we're going to encourage them to tell you. Even on our documents, we give them the opportunity to let us notify you of their gift intentions. But at the same token, you know, we would encourage you all to be asking. So we can encourage folks to raise their hand and notify you and tell you, but the same token, don't be afraid to ask those favorite supporters, especially the ones you referred to us. You know, have you included or have you considered including our ministry in your will? Some will tell you and some will not, and that's okay. But don't be afraid to ask that question, because that's where some of the great doors can open sometimes. Let's see, a question just popped in from Bill. I'm just reading through it here real quick. What if we discover the donor articulates a need or desire to create a plan, but there is really not much in the estate? How do we handle those types of situations? So any one of you want to tackle that? If it's not a very significant estate, we've got a lot of tools at our disposal to refer donors to. So somebody want to touch on that just a little bit?
Oh yeah, Kurt, I'm happy to jump in and please, sure. Colleagues want to flesh out a little bit. Yeah, so one of the best things about working here in this capacity is, like we talked about, we don't have, you know, we don't work on fees, commissions, referrals. We don't have a dog in the fight. We're here because we think the Lord wants us here, and we love doing this ministry work and being in partnership with you. So to that end, whether we're working with the family foundations that are worth potentially hundreds of millions, or the widow with her two mites, we're going to give everybody, you know, the best guidance that we can and the best recommendations possible. So go ahead and feel free to send them our way. We've got some processes, and we've been doing some things even in my shorter tenure that we've got that we can assist. We could come alongside your donor, wherever they find themselves, and we're just happy to work with them. And then I'll just add on too, sometimes we find that there doesn't look to be a lot. I've gone into several meetings where it's like, well, it's a smaller estate. They're just trying to do something, you know, just making sure to leave a couple dollars to their kids, maybe do some tax efficiencies there. And then as you start chatting with them, you you discover some real opportunities. So feel free, send your donors our way, and mm-hmm. We'll give them the best time and attention we can.
Yep. Thank you, Travis. And, you know, at the end of the process, or the, you know, there's ultimately the referral to go out and get these documents drafted. And these days, there's a lot of different vehicles in which people can do that, whether it's be referred to local counsel that we know, whether it's to be referred to, you know, their church friends to find out an attorney that, you know, they've worked with that they really enjoy. Or for those that need it, there's plenty of online services that will produce documents that are sufficient to meet the needs of their estate plan in their estates. So everybody, there really isn't an excuse now these days for anybody not to have an estate plan and have their documents in order, because the access and ease of which you can get them done these days compared to what it was perhaps 30 years ago, especially with the online tools. Say what you might about the online tools. In some cases, they may be better than having nothing at all. And while we still prefer to send folks to actual counsel that'll draft those documents, at times the other ones may be suitable and in order and meet the needs of some folks that may have more limited access. But as a key thing to keep in mind is our services are eligible to any supporter of your ministry. There is no qualification that needs to happen. We will just go through a process to try to gauge what's the best route to take those donors through. Thank you, Bill, for your kind comment as well. We do have a great team of people. They are all like-minded and hearted to helping donors be great stewards of what they have and to support their favorite ministries. And I got to tell you, we often say all the time, we get one of the best jobs around. I mean, we get to help people give their money away. You know, we work with some of the most generous folks that the Lord's blessed, and we're just helping them plan and give their money away. And it doesn't get much better than that when we're able to see some of these gifts come to fruition. We ran a little longer today than we normally do, and that's okay, because it's a complex topic. I encourage all of you as members of ours to, if you haven't experienced a planning appointment yourselves, schedule one. Because one of the best ways you can do and make a referral is to be able to offer first person account of how it worked for you and be able to say, you know, my wife and I, or my husband and I sat down and met with Steve or Amy or Travis or Nathan or Adam, and this is what they helped us through with. And so having that first person credibility really helps in the referral process as well. So I would encourage you, if you haven't done so, call and make an appointment. Give us a call at our 800 number or email the planning at barnabasfoundation.com and get that scheduled. And we'd be happy to help you out as well.
Thank you for listening to today's broadcast, brought to you by Barnabas Foundation. To learn how you can give to your church and other favorite ministries in smart and powerful ways, visit www.barnabasfoundation.com.